Of course, from Honorable Lydia Maseko, due to ill health, God Minister Tele is acting Inter-Ministerial Committee in Pretoria, and God Honorable Tuwela, who is actually will arrive late because his family. His wife was admitted to hospital yesterday. Those are the apologies that I have, members, that are written. I know Honorable Tuwela, because he's now active in communication. They are having a portfolio committee in communication today. I think we'll sort that one out later, but I think she won't be here today. Those are the apologies. Welcome, Deputy Minister. We are just going to receive a presentation from USASA on the submission to executive members, and then we'll deal with the interaction questions and comments after they have done the presentation. Firstly, I'm not sure GM if you want to give some open remarks before we give over to the delegation to USASA led by Mr. Zhao. Thank you very much, Chair. I won't take much time, except just to say you will be with us. We, from the USASA side, we are led by an acting chairperson who is not familiar in terms of the issues that the committee might bring. And on our side, we have DDG Shelembe, who is also new in the oversight division. But basically, the USASA has presented their first bank to the department, and the department reliably informed that it is made input. So it's an approved first plan. And then, for now, it's basically that, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
In terms of our delegation list, we were expecting that the acting DG would be here. I don't have a formal apology in front of me.
Chairperson, if I may I convey the apology of the acting DG and also convey the apology for not submitting in writing, that he was not going to be able to make it. But we had to split as a department because concurrent to this meeting, there's a SCOPA meeting on the post office, and therefore the DG has been requested to attend that meeting. Thank you, Chair.
The apology is noted. Over to the staff.
Morning, Portfolio Committee, Honorable Kubai, and also I want to acknowledge your colleagues together with the members on the floor. I want to acknowledge them for inviting us to come to this meeting. Mine is going to be short, but before I proceed, I also want to actually have my colleagues who are actually sitting next to me to just quickly introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chairperson of the Committee and the members at large. My name is Vuyon Jogo. I'm the Executive Manager responsible for performance at USASA. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Maso Tumina. I'm the Acting CEO, but substantially I'm the Executive for Operations with the Project USASA. Thank you.
Once again, thanks for the opportunity for us to face USASA to come and to just view the presentations as what was requested. Very quickly, before I hand over to my colleagues, I just want again very quickly to actually just capture what USASA is, which I think the committee is well aware of our mandate, and particularly the areas we are looking at is societal impact. Lastly, in the area of broadband connectivity in the underserved areas. I think everybody sitting there is aware of our mandate. And the new board is continuing from where the previous board left. And we are very excited about what is facing us going forward through leadership of the GPS and also yourselves. Just very quickly, I mean, aware of the five-year plan, which is actually what drives us in terms of the annual plans. So we here today to just present the plan for this year, obviously informed by the five-year plan. Importantly, if one looks at what we're dealing with year after year, it is our view that it's very important that we build capabilities towards building the society to the workers' center of excellence as far as rollout of our programs. And year after year, because also the technology is actually, of course, enough to actually live with current times and future. So as a result of that, we deal with national bodies and local bodies so that whatever we implement on the ground is relevant. Also as far as broadband, I'm sure you're aware of all the issues that pertain to our implementation, which talks to National Development Plan, Medium Strategy Framework, and FA Connect goals. And for us, what is important as go forward is actually to really build on and integrated ICT model in terms of resources and implementation, you know, mobilizing resources in the provincial offices as we go across with them. And that's going to be our model going forward, you know, because I'm sure, I mean, as you know, I mean, USASA is doing one part of the rollout, but also you've got a lot of private companies out there, and also you've got associated government bodies in the related government provincial offices, and also you've got other ancillary structures, institutions, and so on. So our role really is to take leadership as a sort of direction to actually harness what's there and look at the differentiation in terms of the offering of the particular institutions that are there. And home and actually so that we impact what we want to do in education, in health, creation of employment, and in economic development, thereby reaching the desired divide. And very, very quickly in terms of summary, in terms of where we come from, I'm sure the committee is aware of this, but it's just a way of reminder. In 2013-2014, in terms of this stuff, we actually implemented rollout in Amalakane, Eastern Cape, and in Singa, in KwaZulu-Natal. And 2014-2015, we did Joe rollout in Northern Bay and Rato in Northwest. 2015, we actually implemented the Aldo-Flutuli, which is Mpumalanga and Motale, local municipality, which is in Limpopo. We've maintained those networks in those areas. And if you look at the numbers that are involved, for instance, you look at schools alone, you look at 381 that to date have broadband. Clinics, we're looking at 246. And in ICT centers, we're looking at 344. And also, over and above that, we actually also looked at schools for persons with disabilities and also connected the ICT services there in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape. Going forward, in the 2015-16, in line with the NGP medium term strategy framework and SA Connect policy goals, we are looking at facilitating, again, the connection in the OR, the Tambo, and more particularly, if you look at the most of these local municipalities there, which is in Savata, Tarindabo, and Monsanto. So we're going to do those two. And also maintain the existing broad networks, which are across the provinces. And also we've got this BDM project, which is still in progress, I'm sure the committee is aware of the BDM project. I think I can just safe to say to the committee that it remains in progress despite challenges here and there which are dealt with by the project team which is between the OC and USADA and related bodies and so on. When we look at milestones that are supposed to be achieved and try to mitigate whatever bottlenecks are there. And we hope we come here because one of the issues with which pertains to this program is the funding issue. If you recall, it was originally envisaged that 70% of the funding that is available will actually be for this program, and it was expected that 80% is going to be coming from beneficiaries. Then there was a cabinet resolution to set the beneficiation at 100%, resulting in a 10% deficit in the funding at the outset. And this is still something that is remaining unresolved. And we hope we'll find a solution to whatever deficit that we have. So that's in a nutshell as far as where we are. And going forward, I think right again to emphasize what's really important for us is integration, mobilization of resources at national and regional provincial level in terms of implementing our resources. And that in a way hopefully is going to minimize duplications. We need to bring all stakeholders together, including private, so that USADA together with private and another sort of entity that is out there can assist, so that at the end of the day the impact becomes what it's supposed to be, you know, and in terms of benefiting communities. I think that for us is very important. The area of incentivization of private sector is something that we're doing as far as implementing the sort of rollout. And in a way, we hope by doing that, it is going to garner more support and people see the need for them to be part of this overall approach in terms of working in isolation. And I'll just stop there, and I'm going to ask my colleague to go to the details in terms of the current plans that we've been asked to come and present. And then thereafter, I'll leave to the honourable members to ask any questions of clarity and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. I will particularly be taking the committee through the USASA and USA strategic plans and annual performance plans. In summary, we'll briefly be touching on the vision of the organization, the mission, its values, the legislative mandate, the key drivers that are driving what actually is undertaken through USAF and USASA, and also the link in terms of how the USASA plans and those of USAF are actually aligned to what the department has planned, and then also the strategy implementation plan for USASA, the funding outlook based on the MTEM allocation that has been allocated by the department. We'll be looking briefly at the corporate risks that have been identified at strategic level for USASA. We'll then move on to USAF, the strategy implementation plan for USAF, as well as the key risks that have been identified as having a applicable bearing on the successful implementation of the USAF products, which will then lead us to the conclusion. The vision of USASA remains universal access and services ICT for all, and that's basically at the core of the projects that are being undertaken by the agency through the Universal Service and Access Fund. The vision is basically to facilitate the rollout of information and access to ICT infrastructure, to facilitate service to other service areas, their contribution to the national goals of eradicating poverty, and also to contributing to ensuring that employment levels are actually increased in the country. We are also seeking to promote and pursue the role of universal service and access and contribute to the sharing and preservation of information in order to build a knowledge society that is sustainable in the country.
In terms of values, we are still very much focused on budget value, which is putting people check, and most key in terms of that are the beneficiaries of our projects that we are rolling out through YESAR. There is integrity at the center of everything that we are actually undertaking as an organization. We are fostering an accountability culture throughout the organization by making sure that each and every employee actually take ownership. First of all, they are aware of how they are supposed to be contributing to the goal of the agency and individually take ownership for ensuring that we do indeed make steps in meeting our targeted goals. We support creativity. There is also transparency in the activities that we are doing, and that is most evident also in the way in which we ensure that when we do get to report on our successes and challenges, we do that in a transparent manner to all stakeholders. Teamwork also is another key one that is actually at the core of everything that we are doing as an organization. Moving on to the legislative mandate, the Constitution is at the heart of everything in terms of being the cornerstone of everything that we are doing. More specifically, if we look at Section 16 of the Bill of Rights, which basically touches on freedom of expression and as well as freedom of access to information through digital. We are also guided by the Public Finance Management Act. We are also guided also by our founding legislation, which is the ECA. And in terms of that, we are still striving to promote the goal of universal access and universal service. We are still looking at actually fostering and adopting new methods of attaining universal access and service. We are required in terms of the Act also to make sure that we do make recommendations to the Minister to determine what constitutes universal access and universal service in underserved areas. Through our research division, we are supposed to keep access of all the developments that are actually related in terms of information communication technology in the country as well as beyond the borders, and any recommendations that are relating to such developments. We are also prepared to advise the authority, which is CASA, on matters relating to universal access and universal service. And in terms of our operations, we actually do submit annual reports on our operations, our budgets, and our expenses to the minister. And that is basically something that is done for both yourself and for yourself. And then we are also further expected to provide incentives to network licensees in order for them to be able to operate and maintain networks in the identified underserved areas. The policy drivers basically are the key ones being the National Development Plan, which is seeking to attain 100% broadband penetration by 2020. So through the rollout of USAF projects, we are making our contribution to that. In terms of also the national growth, new growth path strategies, which focuses on creating additional employment opportunities in the ICT sector in particular, as well as in education sector and healthcare. There's also the 615 aim, which is to ensure that there is access to digital assets for all citizens in South Africa by 2020. And we start that together with the other entities of the department, namely Centec, DBI, also other parties that are actually assisting together with us to make sure that our whole ICT access to all industries. In terms of the NCSF goals, we are actually focusing on ensuring that we do provide connectivity to schools, healthcare facilities, and other government facilities. And then we also, in terms of SA Connect, we're supposed to contribute to affordable broadband availability to make sure that the needs of private and public users are addressed in terms of ICT access. We've taken a further step in terms of ensuring that everything that's contained in the UFATA and UFAP plan is actually aligned to the strategic goals of our current department, which is DTPF. And in terms of the plans of the department, they've got a strategic goal one, which is basically to ensure that there is broadband connectivity, which is secure and affordable, and is actually accessible to all citizens, with a particular focus on education and healthcare centers, as well as other government services at large. So UFAS is actually contributing to this goal of the department by ensuring that there is a focus on ensuring that there is a rollout of broadband services to identify underserved areas. And also in terms of that, we have mentioned by the citizens that there are also broadband projects in 6 underserved areas, with 2 more actually being planned in the 2017 financial period. In terms of the departmental goal of ensuring that the department itself, together with its entities, are actually more efficient and they actually effectively deliver on their respective mandates. So that is actually required that USADA takes a look at its strategic focus and ensure that we are actually focusing on optimizing our own organizational efficiency. But we are actually looking at our current systems and ensure that those systems are actually aligned in terms of being able to drive us towards achieving our goals. And also just further ensuring that the systems that we have within the organization are actually integrated and actually do respond to the needs of what they are actually supposed to be achieving. Another gap that we have identified, which will close through the implementation of the 2017 plan, EPP for us, USASA, is ensuring that we do focus on maintaining good relations with our stakeholders, and that will also relate to just enhancing the brand of USASA and USA. And then over above that, also on the governance side, the key focus for both entities will be on ensuring that we do indeed maintain good levels of legal and regulatory compliance. Because in the past, we have been able to achieve amplified audit reports, but through keeping a strong on the legislative and regulatory compliance side, the aim there is to move from that unqualified report to actually attaining clean audit accounts for both entities. On slide 7, moving on to the actual strategy implementation plan for USASA. The key thing there that has been identified as a focus area is actually ensuring that we enhance our human capital, which is why an agency has actually undertaken a project of ensuring that we are undergoing an organizational development process. The 14-15 financial year and actually saw the approval of the board that was in place at the time. And the focus from then, which has been basically now to move from that into actually making that structure a reality in terms of ensuring that indeed we pay attention to our skills, get analysis, and we have programs in place in terms of making sure that we develop work skills plans that will address the identified shortages in terms of the skills that are currently available within the agency. So in terms of the 2017 plans, we will actually be focusing on ensuring that we implement that organizational work skills plan in order to ensure that the identified skill gaps are actually closed. Further to that, we will also be making sure that we focus on actually reviewing our HR policies, because the shift in terms of moving from a current structure to a new structure will also need to be further supported by policies that actually support what the actual direction that the organization is taking in terms of its strategic objectives. So a need then has also been identified in terms of making sure that we review key HR policies, which are basically the resourcing policy, our learning and development policy, our performance progression policy, because at the end of the day, we do want to retain the existing skills pool that we have, and also ensure that we do our programs in terms of making sure that we monitor performance, not only at the organizational, but also at individual level. And further to that, then we'll be also looking at the health and safety wellness policy, which will also be reviewed in the 2017 financial year. Further to that, we'll also be focusing on ensuring that there is actually a service level agreement that will guide in the key areas within the human resources function, which will focus on recruitment, training, industrial relations, change management, and employment equity, as well as employee wellness. So then it means that we will need to then make sure that the focus remains on our most important asset in the organization, which is our people, and just make sure that we do hold our HR accountable in terms of what they're supposed to be doing in terms of recruiting the right people, retaining the right people, and also making sure that appropriate training programs are actually implemented to address the gaps that have been identified. Moving on to the system side of things, a need has been identified within the organization to make sure that the various systems that it has currently are actually integrated into a single system that will also align with the processes in terms of making sure that our systems are actually aligned to the processes that are in place and also aligned to the process. So in 15-16, focus has been on making sure that we implement the ERP process, ERP system, which is actually planned to go live in the 2017 financial year. So focus instead of that will be on actually rolling out that system and making sure that we actually focus on systems training for all our people to enable them to be able to actually fully implement that system and actually make the most of it in terms of actually enhancing the performance of the organization. In terms of the IT also, there's been a need to ensure that we do actually retain satisfactory levels of system uptime. And that one will be a particularly key important issue because having rolled out, in terms of rolling out a new system, you need to make sure that you don't always face challenges in terms of keeping that system up and running. So that is why we need to also still remain focused on ensuring that our systems are not only integrated, but they are also available and able to respond to the needs of the organization. So we are actually making sure that we keep our pulse on that as well. Moving on to slide number 8, a key thing also that we need to focus on is in terms of making sure that we do actually provide and promote legal compliance within the organization and ensure that whatever challenges exist in the organization, we are in a position to actually tap into sound legal advice internally and then ensure that those services are provided within the stipulated turnaround time. And then in terms of information, provision of information to Universal Service, which relates to our research unit. The focus for the research unit in 16-17 will be on actually shifting to making sure that we conduct impact analysis. We've touched on the point that there have been rollout of program projects in six underserviced areas. So the important thing now to actually dig into is to check the impacts that have actually been attained to those service, those programs rollout projects. What impact did we actually achieve, and also assess the actual challenges that have actually been identified in order for those to be turned into important lessons that can then impact on future planning processes for USAP projects. So that's why the focus then of the research unit will now be shifting on conducting impact analysis on all the six areas where broadband rollout projects have been successfully implemented by USAP. In order for those then to be shared with the relevant stakeholders, including the department and other industry players, as well as including the regulator. In terms of the stakeholder relations, there have been a number of negative reports in various forms of media in past years about USAP, and the key thing now that we need to do is turn around those stakeholder sessions and actually make them see the value as in terms of what USAP is achieving. So the key thing there will be on making sure that we will beef up our relationships with key stakeholders and that we also share what we are actually implementing as an agency and share the successes that we're actually achieving as an agency in order for us to be able to actually turn around the perceptions that are out there about the agency. And then in terms of the last one, but which is actually the most important one in terms of governance, ISASA is going to remain focused on clean administration and actually making sure that all our activities are actually guided by the relevant regulatory principles and that in terms of the governance structure, we do comply with the PFMA, we do comply with other relevant pieces of legislation, we do actually comply and keep track of that on an ongoing basis. And we will then checking that on a quarter basis and reporting on such just to be sure that we do not backslide in terms of the audit outcomes that the agency has achieved in the past and actually do move forward in terms of being able to improve on existing audit outcomes. Moving on to slide number 9, where we are now touching on the funding allocations. The funding allocations or budget allocations is actually funds that are actually allocated by our parent department, DTPS. And in the current financial year, a sum of 262 million was actually allocated, but 196 million of that was actually specific funding that was in relation to the administration and project management of the BDR project. So that is why there's a bigger allocation in the 2016, or the wider allocation in 2016 in comparison to the subsequent years. For 2017, we have been allocated a sum of 69 million by the department, and 43 million of that is actually just over 60%, which will be basically going towards employee compensation, leaving then a total of 24 million that will be going to goods and services, and as well as 1 million that will be going to CAPEX. The CAPEX allocation there of that 1 million is basically just relating to IT-related equipment, furniture, as well as fittings. And in the 17-18 year, that budget allocation will 75.6 million, and in 18-19, it will be 80 million. On the next slide, which is slide number 10, in the process of reviewing its plans, the board, together with the ESCO, identified key risks that could potentially impact on the successful achievement of the goals that have been set and the targets that have been set for USASA as an entity. And the key one that has been identified is basically relating to the adequacy of the skills pool. In the inadequacy of the skills set could impact on our ability to deliver on USASA targets. That's also being said, bearing in mind that all the administration of USASA is actually undertaken by resources that are held by USASA. So it is very key then that we focus on that. But that is to be indicated by the conclusion of the OD process and then ensuring that when we do fisher recruitment, we focus on the core skills that are actually required, particularly in terms of the technical skills that will enable USAF to actually successfully complete projects. Another one just relates to the ERP system. I've touched briefly earlier on the fact that we are in the process in 16-17 of actually rolling out and implementing the enterprise resource planning system to integrate and actually automate our processes and systems. So the key thing there is basically relating to change management, because we have to make sure that we obtain buy-in from our employees so that there is not an investment that is actually in place, and then relevant buy-in is not obtained. So that is a key focus area as well, which will be a focus for 16-17. Then the decommissioning of the legacy systems will also be a mitigating factor to ensure that everybody, once everything has been fully rolled out on the legacy system, that there is no backup available in terms of employees being able to backslide old systems that should have actually been discontinued. And then system training will continue to be a focus area as well. And then in terms of disaster recovery, a major risk that is faced by any organization, not only USASA, is a possible inability to continue with operations in the event of any disaster occurring, which is why then USASA has focused on ensuring that we do tighten up our business continuity plan in order for us to be able to fully respond to any nature of disaster that we could face in the future. Then on the financial management side, I've mentioned earlier that we've obtained unqualified audit outcomes for USASA and USAF. And the key risk now that we face would be a potential backsliding in terms of failure to comply with the draft standard in terms of the reporting requirements that are in place for party entities. And to mitigate that, we're actually ensuring that those that are responsible for preparing the financial statements are actually given the necessary training in terms of making sure that they stay ahead of all the developments that are there in terms of draft standards and the draft updates that are coming up. And then there is one that is on clarity in terms of our FS role within EthiConnect. In terms of that, there are ongoing discussions between the agency and the para department in just to be sure that we are indeed very clear of how we are supposed to be contributing to that. And those discussions are actually ongoing just to be sure that we are actually properly voted on the point with our specific roles outlined. Then I've touched on the stakeholder perceptions that we are focusing on changing in 16-17 so that we continue to be a focal area to be sure that we do remain relevant and we do actually portray the entity in a positive light in terms of actually being able to achieve what it was actually mandated to do. Then a key one also relates to the recommendations of the ICT review panel with regards to the future institutional arrangements of the entity. So that one is currently still a cloud that is hanging over the entity. But in the current financial year, we will be continuing with engagements with the department in terms of that. Then we move on to USAF on slide number 12. USAF is basically continuing with three focus areas, that being the rollout of broadband, the maintenance of connectivity to schools, education, primary healthcare facilities and ICT centers, as well as implementation of the BDM project. For 16-17, we are targeting two underserved areas in the Oakhambo district, and those areas are actually Mthombo local municipality, as well as the Kingabatajalindebo municipality. And that will then be actually adding to the six areas where this has actually successfully already rolled out broadband projects. In terms of the network connectivity that we are maintaining, we are focusing on making sure that 127 schools, 92 clinics, and 38 access centers where USAF has actually rolled out connectivity to remain connected during the 2017 financial period and going forward. Also that there's actually a focus on making sure that we do focus on the vision project. The 2016 financial period saw the initiation of procurement processes with regard to that, and the focus then for USAF going forward will be on making sure that we do indeed procure and install those STDs for the qualifying and to be on households that is actually applied for such. Moving on to slide number 13, in terms of the USAF strategic risks. The USAF risks are very much connected to those that have been identified for USAF, seeing that USAF is the administrative arm of USAF. So once again, we have started there with ensuring that we do address the skills gap challenges in terms of being able to roll out the USAF projects. So we will still be focusing on ensuring that USAF is indeed skilled in terms of the requisite technical skills that are required to fulfill its mandate. And then a key challenge that is also facing USAF is a funding challenge in terms of being able to fully roll out broadband projects. Because as I've noted earlier, we are only targeting two areas in System 17, and that has been mainly guided by the available resources that we have at our disposal. So engagements will be continued with our parents as well as just to be sure that we do align ourselves with regards to that. A challenge that is also related to the VDM project is the challenge of low uptake and usage. And that in the main is actually a result of the fact that in terms of ensuring that there is public awareness about the VDM project, that is actually housed within the Department of Communications. So the challenge going forward is to ensure that we do engage the department in terms of being able to really also participate in facilitating campaigns that will really enhance public awareness around digital projects, because that will also impact on user ability to really succeed in terms of making sure that the installations are indeed done for relevant qualifying households. I've already touched on the next one, which talks about the negative stakeholder perceptions, which we are targeting to change going forward through vigorous campaigns that will target all our key stakeholders in terms of being able to share the successes and actually just make sure that our stakeholders are kept abreast of the developments in terms of rolling out our projects. Then there's an issue also in terms of affordability of our services, and that can be addressed by implementing the E-rate. That to ensure that institutions that actually do qualify for that are actually allowed to benefit from that, because then that will allow USAF to be able to have a broader reach in terms of making sure that they do provide connectivity services to more qualifying access areas and institutions. Then I've already touched on the technical skills, so we are actually moving forward, focusing on making sure that we do beef up the human capacity of USASA in order for USASA to be able to be strong enough to actually indeed support the project rollout of USAF. And then the last one there just basically relates to the funding challenge. That is actually an ongoing challenge for the entity in terms of being able to have a broader impact. If we are to have a broader impact, we do need to actually make sure that we address the current challenges that are facing the institution in terms of having sufficient budget for driving broadband projects and related projects. In conclusion, a key issue to be noted is basically the uncertainty that still remains due to the ICT panel review recommendations. Because the outcome of that will actually impact strongly on actual institutional arrangements of USASA. For 2017, we are still focusing on ensuring that we do focus on enhancing our human capital, that we do focus on realigning our processes to ensure that we are indeed becoming more and more effective in terms of being able to do achieve our mandate. implementation of the ERP system is going to come to a staggered approach, which will be prioritizing the key functions, maybe finance and HR, just to be sure that indeed the agency is driven towards becoming automated and integrated in terms of this business systems, so that we could have a better approach in actually succeeding to meet our targets. And then focus will remain with the guidance of the board on ensuring that indeed we do strengthen our governance and accountability within both USADA and USAS, and also just make sure that we do actually pay particular focus to ensuring that we do comply with all legislative requirements and justice for both entities. For USAS, we will continue on focusing on making sure that those underserved communities that have been identified do actually get connected to broadband services. We are committed to ensuring that existing connections are actually maintained in the 2017 financial period to the educational institutions and the healthcare facilities and other facilities where we have actually facilitated connectivity. And also, focus will also continue to be on the implementation of the DM program. And then just in closing, budget availability does continue to limit our ability to accelerate the rollout of our projects. And that's something that we will continue to focus on and particularly engage our parent department on this going forward. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think we'll take the next round of comments and questions from members, and then we'll come back again for the engagement. So the members should just know that it's your first round, and then we'll come back. And then we'll request that you should write down the comments or the notes so that you can respond to those on the members. Honorable Shin, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Dugin, Honorable Mafoul. And that order, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a lot of questions because on reading the reports, I've become more confused about what was the status of SA Connect and the set-top box program than I've been in a long time, because the information just doesn't seem to gel. So I don't know if there's a lack of communication or what. But in the presentation and in the plans, it said that you had ordered, or going to be ordering, 1.4 million set-top boxes. I guess it just needs to go. Sorry. 1.4 million set-top boxes, and the cumulative cost I worked out of 1.3 billion rand. Now, I've seen orders that were placed in August last year for 1.5 million set-top boxes and 1.5 million satellite dishes and antennas, amounting to 3 billion rand. So I wanted to know what that discrepancy is there, because these are quite quite different figures. It said somewhere in the USAS flat plan that 1.9 billion for digital migration has already been spent. I'd like to know what that has been spent on. And I'd also like to know what is the status of the rollout of these set-top boxes. I can't find it now, I'm looking for it. That earlier this year, by the end of January, 609 complete set-top box kits were delivered to the SKA area. And then of these, 157 had been issued, and 110 had been installed. That is by the end of January. Then there's also a total number of orders to obviously be some Northern Cape and Free State of close to 25,000. And then we also had a problem of the whether all those people have licenses, how are you going about checking it? Okay, I just have some clarity on where we are with this. But obviously, there isn't the money for this. From what I understand, Treasury hasn't allocated any more money to the set-top box rollout program since, I think, 2014. And then it was going to be 3 billion rands worth, and only had money for about half of that. So what has been done about it, and what is the status of that? Because I'm really quite confused now about all of that. Then on Ethernet, now this is very much what is, because some of you say you've rolled out two towns, which is Alberta Tuli and Mutali. That was during 2015-16. This year, Tulamela and Okada. So that's four villages in 2 years. Then you talk about supplying broadband to 6 districts. And so I'm not sure if these others, what is this is SAPNX related, so what is this all normal day job? You know, you've always been trying to connect outlying areas. So what I'm trying to do is find out what was in play before SAPNX and what is in play with SAPNX now. Because the figures just don't add up. Also, the difference between phase 1 and phase 2. Now, presentation we had by DTS last week, I think it was, a week before. Anyway. From that, I understood that phase 1 was the rollout to all the government sites within 8 district municipalities. And that phase 2 was the rest of the country, identified targets. And that was only going to kick in 2018, 2019. Now, some of the detail that's in here talks about Mutali and Chief Alberta Tuli having phase 2 implementation. Of what? You know, so please explain to me what is phase 1 and phase 2, and what are these, what I assume are phase 1 sites having to do with phase 2. Yeah, I think if we can start with those, because I really am not sure of what's going on here.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a strong focus in your presentations on human resources, on a work skills plan, and your risk analysis for both USAF and USASA has identified the lack of skills as being a problem. Yet in the USASA presentation, salaries account for 2/3 of your budget. So if you don't have the skills, on what basis were people recruited and on the basis are they being paid? So perhaps you could just explain that to me. 2/3 seems, of your budget seems like money spent on salaries. Then you could give me specifically the number of people that are involved in your communications or your stakeholder relations department. How many people are there? Then I find it interesting that on slide 5 you talk about the implementing agencies, and Telkom is one of those agencies. And you put them in the middle of a whole lot of government-owned agencies, and then you say, and the private sector. Now, to the best of my understanding, Telkom is a private company. It's a listed company. Why do you see Telkom as an implementing arm of government, or do you view it as part of the private sector? Then you've asked for more funding, and you mentioned funding as a an obstacle to rolling out broadband, and that much is clear. I don't see how you can do a great deal with 25 million or 28 million in terms of rolling out networks. As a committee, when we did our oversight visit to Limpopo, we had an opportunity to engage with a gentleman called Mr. Arthur of Maine, and I'm sure we're all familiar with Mr. Arthur's 41 million and network. Basically, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but perhaps I'd just give you some insight. He had four towers, his own small towers next to huge Telkom towers and Vodacom towers, and he had his own dishes on it, and he was operating in the free spectrum band. Yet there was no contract in place that Mr. Arthur had to actually maintain or operate or keep this network going for any period of time. In other words, he got paid, he built the network, and he could literally, and I asked the question, He could literally go and lie on a beach in the Bahamas if that's what he wanted to do. He said, no, he wouldn't do that. But that was the only guarantee. There was no contractual obligation for Mr. Arthur to continue maintaining this. And in fact, when we went to the local municipality, one of the people at the municipality said, one of the members from the department said, the municipality should contract with Mr. Arthur separately to maintain this network, but there was nothing in place. So I'm very interested to know how you manage the disbursement of this money and how you allocate it to people. Because to go and ask for a 5 times increase in levy without safeguards in place to manage contracts effectively, I think is pushing it a bit. Jefferson, I'll wait for the second round. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The strategic plan and APP do not reflect on how it will or has already addressed the issue of consistency in compliance with matters raised by AG on the audit findings. Can you please explain us? Thank you.
Honorable Mafulu. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. If you further keep on telling us about the negative perception of stakeholders, how often do you meet with stakeholders? And then your vacancy rate, how long does it take to fill your vacant post? And then the last one is the criteria you use to identify communities that need broadband services. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think from my side, firstly is to link the current strategy that is put before us and what was presented last time. In the 2015 to 2016 financial year, you sort of said to us that while you are acknowledging that your staff budget, your salary budget was higher, sitting at 50%, and therefore you have committed for that financial year. And maybe let me just say, in the current year, there are vacancies that have been frozen in order to ensure that the expenditure will remain within budget. And part of the issues that are raised there was that it was a backlog. Let me just go back to that paragraph. However, the issue of legacy issues has been exacerbated to the matter in the staff benefits, which were outstanding over a period of 2 years, had been settled. Now, this was an explanation given of the previous legacies and all that. But you look at the current financial year as well, the issue of staff payments still sits at that amount. I think you also do, again, I'm just trying to find the page, you do acknowledge that in page 18 of the current one, that was on page 15 of the previous one, the current page 18 of the current one, where even the main reason for the driver has been very complications. And followed by good services. And your last one was operational cost expenditure, which was sitting at 36%, and the CAPEX was 54%. Now, looking at the current one, where you find 60% of the total budget on compensation and 40%, what I got in the sense of the previous financial year when you were tabling was that this was an issue you are addressing it. You are checking again, it's still an issue of not addressed. So you are requesting us to still approve the same anomaly that you have picked up, kind of 60% of the overall budget going to compensation. And you are still saying that no, you are addressing it. I'm just looking at the previous one. And then in terms of organizational development, it was part of your previous strategy that has been tabled. Now I think we'll look forward to the accounting towards the end of the year. I think the cycle is just a bit difficult for it to be nice to have the accounting first before we can even agree with this one. But again, I've looked at your strategic plan, the 5-year one of previously, and the one that you are tabling now. The 2015-2020 and the 2017-2021. And based on Treasury regulations, in terms of what guides the submission and the resubmission of strategic plan, maybe you sort of would have to explain, but I did not find a reason why you just was resubmitting the strategic plan, because there are guidelines and would appeal with the department to
Rachel Gataki had heard that Kali. Now, linking on the broadband rollout, coming back, I've looked at what Sasa is saying, and maybe Sasa will explain its role in versus page 14, where it is the department's targets in their own APP. Sasa's funding in terms of how it works, it works under the fund, it's administered differently. There are strict regulations for it must be administered and how it must be managed. And that can be otherwise. I remember when we were engaging with GOC at some point when we had a joint meeting where there were even suggestions that maybe the usual fund for digital DPT migration, like digital migration, the set of boxes must go to GOC. And our explanation was very clear. It will be unlawful, it will be illegal. That was a very, very clear message. Now, I'm finding this page very problematic, and it appears very unlawful. If USASA is taking the funds of users to fund for the broadband rollout of the equipment, that must be clarified. Because you have listed in your APP the sites that have been identified for broadband rollout as per department, which an appropriation has been given, an appropriated fund is allocated for that specific amount. Yes, we acknowledge the department that there is a shortfall. From what is requested and what Chidera has given, there is a difference. But that they are not given, that I don't know, and I need to be clarified here, because what you look here is very, very illegal if that's what is happening. And maybe DDG would have to clarify, and Chidera would have to clarify, in terms of this broadband rollout. Because we cannot have the target of the department in terms of the rollout of the broadband when it's appropriated to reflect in your APP. If there's money that is going to be used by staff from the staff fund for the broadband rollout, must be to check in this clearly and must be to check in the department that is reflected clearly for us to know and how it's done, because there's a procedure on how it's done. It can be done through budget. So that is a clarity that I need. And maybe as well, on the issue of cost, just tell us how you're intending to deal with this issue of reducing the cost, because you can't have an entity to spend 6% of its budget on the. Now, linked to my comment on broadband rollout, it goes to page 19, where it starts listing as risks, where it's not clear in its role on the SA Connect. So is what you have put in the pages earlier your own identified role? You are saying you are confused about your role, so you, as in your midst of your confusion, did you go and assign your own role on the SA Connect responsibility? The indicators which I think are correct, I'm happy with them. In terms of the monitoring of, I think, is it a new one? Where you're talking about how you included the issue of compliance with the law and ensuring that your audit opinions are improving. Because sometimes we find that audit ages of food audit opinions isn't a mechanism. So to see that as part of the target within the strategy is very encouraging. I think that is good. One should commend it, because it's very important that it shows the commitment to adhering to compliance of the law. Page 21. And page 22. Key performance indicator, human capital training and development progress aligned to organizational strategies. And then the next one, optimal functioning human resource policies and systems aligned to organizational strategies. Just to ask, why I'm saying this is a new indicator. I'll tell you what, when you look at your five-year strategic plan, We did have our organizational skills plan. As you said, human capital and training is not part of your WSP. Because for me, it's almost like it was included. It's not a new target where I'm shooting. It could be a different way of using words. Because if you advocate work skills plan, it's about development, it's about training, it's about capacitation, individuals within the organization. Now, you put WSP and the adherence to it for different purposes, for capacitation of the organization, for people to be able to meet their targets. Other purposes could be that your training has not been aligned to your strategy, therefore, but you had the WSP as a target. Now, when you say this is a new target, I'm failing to understand what does that mean. Then the issue there's something around disaster recovery. I was trying to check on in terms of the previous one because this as well was something that was raised and the issues of IT previously. And whilst it I'm a bit concerned, it seems like some of the targets that we did not achieve last time, we kept them over. Has there been any consequence management in terms of what has not been achieved? And then there's a target that I'm a bit confused about, page 31. JASA established as a center of excellence for universal access and universal service market information and expertise by 2021. Information on provision of access. This, I'm not so sure, GM and does this become a responsibility of JASA? To establish a center of excellence on universal access. And what does that mean? When you say we are becoming a center of excellence. Because if you look at the targets as well, it says it's a new indicator. Monitor and evaluate the impact of universal access and universal service. You are the provider of universal service, isn't it? You are meant to. How do you become now the monitor? Are you not assigning yourself a role of a referee and a prayer at the same time? Because if you are given that responsibility of being people who deal with the issues of universal service, universal access. Now you go and imagine, so you go and do anything that broadband roll out. That's part of bridging access. Now are you sure you're gonna come back yourself and be the evaluator? Maybe transpire could be having a wrong perception. But what I'm seeing this target looks like you are assigning yourself a responsibility of a referee and a player at the same time. Let me allow you to answer those two issues that I raised. I'll come back into the other issues because I need to go into the resource and all that. But let me just allow you to respond to those that I've raised for now and other members that have raised. And then we'll go to round two of questions. Over to you.
What I propose, thank you, sir. What I propose I'll do with my committee is we'll actually answer questions as we feel competent, and I'm hope the department also is going to help us as far as addressing all the issues that have been raised. I think where I'm sitting, I think I need to just very quickly talk about a BDM project. Just to allay the concerns that were raised. that has been perennial delays in the PDM project. And ultimately was launched by the minister mid-December. That's when it started. Yes, there were orders made sometime in August, early August, somewhere on the 3rd of August. But the payment was never affected until this year, because there were certain milestones that were supposed to be accessed, even from the product side of things, i.e., quality assurance, obtaining of the certification from Centec, and meeting the 2030 manufacturing parameters, and there were a lot of things that those appointed manufacturing companies had to address, and the three of them, in a way, had to actually make sure that they address those issues. So that's why there were a lot of delays. So no money was actually signed out until this year. And even this year, what is happening, you've got only one company that is better than the others because of them having a better factory than the others, which is CZ Electronics. And it's the only company so far that has been paid recently. So the payments have only been made recently because, and also I must highlight that there's companies like Elif, which has been on the rising of the wave as far as printing is concerned. So Elif, yes, in terms of rising of antennas, is one company that has been exemplary. That's a big company. We had issues as well in terms of the CEO getting off here for a month, and he had the signing authority, and for us to change those signing authorities to the current executive team, it had to undergo a process. So that's why there's been delays in terms of payments. For instance, I can say to this committee that the payments were only effected 2 weeks ago, instead of last week. I can say that. And those payments are going to be staggered. They will go over for a few months to come. So there's not many payment of the amounts of all the amounts raised on the table. I can say here on record that no payment has been made until recently. And we are managing the process from to make sure that whatever amounts are paid, they are paid on following the process, due process, and for us to ensure that they meet the standards that are required under the contract that has been signed. So in a nutshell, that's what I want to say about the PDM project. So there has not been any big amounts paid. I think the maximum we've paid today is around 30 million. I can say that. I'll ask my colleagues to deal with the other issues, and I'll come in later. I'll ask acting CEO to actually cover some of the operational matters that have been raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try and go through the list of questions. I hope I haven't missed anything. Starting with Honourable Shin, you asked the questions about the value of the orders that have been placed within the region of 1.3, so that would be committed funds but not spent funds, as the Chair has indicated. You also asked a question around what is the status of the BDM project. To date, we've got about 1.7 installations that have been done. 1,600, not 1,600. If we were to 1,600 installations that have been completed, and then if we were to look on the manufacturing side, from a DTG perspective, we've got about 160,000 units, 166,000 units that are in Savo.
And then on the DCH side, we've got 5,300 units that are within sample. 5,300. And this is what is within sample. There's also stock that has been produced that is not yet within sample. We're verifying 92,000 from CZ. We've finished verifying 84,000 from Eddie's. And we're going to be starting a process of verifying about 25,000 from Rata Dima, 5,000 from Chile C. So it's what I'm trying to paint the picture is the stuff that's already paid for that is within the sample property. And then there's production that's already happened that we have to then verify before we can dispatch it to sample and consider the invoice. So. So our payment process works as follows. The supplier will indicate that they have considered an order and submit an invoice. So before we pay the invoice, we then dispatch team to on the ground to verify those orders and verify the serial numbers and the number of equipment. So this is done so that we prevent a situation where we pay for something and it in fact has not been logged or has not been produced. So that's what verifying means. And then based on those sign-offs, we then process the payment. You have also had a question around the status of the binding deficit. That continues. It's something that we are engaged in together with DOC as well as DPPS. Then you had a question around SA Connect. What is within the confines of SA Connect vis-a-vis what was on a normal course of business. The sites in Singa and Emalahleni, Ratlo and Jomorolo were done prior to the commencement of the implementation of FA Connect. So that's what I would say was done in the ordinary course of business. The sites out that lived to me and Mutali were implemented at the onset of FA Connect. Albert Lutuli being in Malanga and Mutali being in Mpoko. What is phase one and phase two of SA Connect? I think here the departments will provide more detail, but broadly speaking, the plan has been divided into phases, starting with phase one being where there's existing infrastructure that has needs to be upgraded, so it's a low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and then phase two is where there's areas where there's usually no infrastructure. That requires a bit more intensive engagement in that respect. But I'll also ask DG Shilimba to just expand on that one, if I may. Then moving on to Honourable McKenzie, you had a question around, we say that the skills shortage, however, we have a 50% expense on salary. That is true, and that is partly a consequence of legacy. We have a fairly large component of skills that are administrative and social. So where we need to be staff is really on the technical skills. So you might have people in the province, for example, that are strong on stakeholder engagement, which you need at that level, but you need to complement them with skills that are technically based that can address and identify problems on projects should the need arise. How many people are in a stakeholder engagement division? One. We have one resource there. In Mpoko, the question around Ming, where there's no contractual obligation for Ming to maintain the network, how do you manage the broadband project contracts? When we engage, when we undergo the broadband sites, we're guided by Section 98, so it requires us to go out of competitive bidding. And then we then contract with the service provider to upgrade or deploy a new network and integrate that network to certain facilities within the community. And that is a means to make it worthwhile or to make it make business sense. for the voter to go in there. There is an incentive for them to maintain the network, otherwise the clients will not be there. And if the clients and the usage is not coming through, we will not pay the connectivity costs of that that network. What we usually do is you upgrade the network, you connect schools, you connect clinics, and we subsidize the clinics for a period of 24 months to be connected to that network. So then not maintaining the network is literally cutting off revenue for themselves. And it's the same method that we would use with any other service provider, including MTN and all the big others that we've worked with. There's no incentive for them not to maintain the network. We can't maintain the network ourselves. We don't own the network. We don't have a license to own the network. The law says we facilitate and subsidize a licensed operator to go into these areas. On the question of the municipalities, I'm contracting directly with the municipality. They would need to do that because the municipality is not receiving a subsidy from ourselves for 24 months. So whereas we would have a contract with them around connection of schools and clinics, they will contract to us. But anybody else outside of that scope would need to contact directly with them and have an arrangement directly with them, whether it's the municipality or it is private businesses in the area. I think I missed the question. Why would Telkom be differentiated from other private service providers? Telkom is not being differentiated. Telkom has been identified as a lead agency, and we look at them as we look at other service providers as well. Like I said before, when we deal with broadband connectivity, we're guided by Section 90, which says you must go on a competitive bidding process. And we have had Telkom apply for subsidies to us. We treat it just as we've had Vodacom, MTN, and other service providers. And we treat them in that respect as well. Honorable Ndungu, I'm not sure if I captured your question correctly. The APP instructions do not address the AG findings. We'll just look into that and respond directly on that one, perhaps point by point. But we try to at least allude to it by highlighting that we have a framework that we use to track AG findings. But if that's what we can do is go through each of the findings and give a report to the committee here on how far we are with tracking those AG findings. Honorable Mafale, how often do you meet with stakeholders? We try to meet the stakeholders fairly often. However, we also try to do it together with the department on a broader national basis. But we also have stakeholders that we interact with on a more regular basis that are linked directly to the projects themselves. So, for example, you would go into if you were going to Owa Tambo, we would go to the Premier's office and to the relevant departments that we would like to pull into it and work on their respective IGR forms and frameworks. So on a project level, it happens quite frequently because it's quite important that we get stakeholders and stakeholder support on the project to make the project move faster and it effectively protects the project implementation. But on more strategic elements, generally the department takes a lead on that. And then we support. How long does it take to fill the vacancy rate? I think it can take about much to 2 months. It depends on the level. In terms of our delegation of authority, just to give you a sense, executive level is the competency of the board, and so that takes a little longer than junior staff recruitment, so to speak. But our policy requires a publication of 7 days, And then there was shortlist, interview, and appointment, and then obviously the usual day-to-day notice that one would need to serve. So if you're looking at a month or two, at most 3 months.
Yes.
Chair, you had questions around staff payments or salary payments that are the same as last year, and whether we dealt with the issues. Those issues, Chair, are coming through again in the same manner because the position still, remember, remains frozen. If you recall, we had frozen the positions because we were completing the national strategy and we thought to align the function to the strategy of the organization. Now, it's been delayed slightly in the sense that the process of migration to a new structure has been somewhat delayed because of engagement, obviously, with the union and so on and so forth. And so it's come through into the financial year as well. Why the recognition of staff names? Chair, I think we should apologize, I think, about for this one and to take the hit for it. Our assumption was that there was a few minor changes here and there that we thought it was prudent to be upfront about, but I think you do make a point, they're not strategic enough as for the framework, so our apologies in that respect. As you said, taking the funds of USA for SA Connect, USA and DGT to respond. Chair, the idea of going into the NHI or SA Connect areas was for us to be able to complement the department as far as possible. And so in anything, excuse me, sorry about that, in other identifying areas, we've been in consultation and taking guidance from the department itself so as to ensure that we're not pulling in different directions. We do not do an ESP to the department in respect of that. What we would do is to say, if you're addressing a particular area, we will complement and adjust a complementary area, not to target funds into the department. So we would still run our own procurement process and log whatever we do as a project and follow our own internal policies with respect to project management frameworks and guidelines and reporting standards in that respect. But I'll also ask Judicial Lamb as well to just expand from the DG perspective on that question. Explain what you mean by lack of clarity. Do we assign our own role? What were you guided by? Chair, what we're referring to here is that there hasn't been a formal communication to USAFA to say, don't do the hip hold pit rule as required by the legislation. And so in the absence of that, we've been implementing Albuquerque and Udali as a full end-to-end aspect. What we're looking for to the department to do is, and of course this is also a version of the rationalization process, is to finalize and say, for those funds, don't no longer look at the network. So I'm just giving a theoretical example here. If let's say EVI is going to be taking care of the network, then we then agree together that, okay, USAFA will take care of the customer access equipment, so the equipment that goes in the clinics and so on and so forth, and maybe even carry the connectivity. So that as a team of SLC providers in the value chain, the provider chain of open connectivity, we are all implementing various aspects that together form one single project that is the National Broadband Project. We are aware that the department has been working to finalize those minor things and that it also has an impact on the SOC rationalization, so we do appreciate the delay. But in the absence of that, we are implementing, guided by what the legislation requires to do. And Section 88 says the youth bus shall be used for the construction and extension of electronic communications networks. So be it on the core network, access network, or into the primary premises, it's the electronic communications network. Why are we having human capital training as a new target? Chair, I think you're right. It's been a target for a number of years. It may be a type that is reflected as a new target. But it's an ongoing activity that we need to be aware of and need to pay considerable attention to. It has been identified by the board as being quite critical and strategic. Hence, it's made its way into the annual plans. I think your last question around is USAFA as a center of excellence, is the responsibility of USAFA. So in this respect, we're guided by Section 82 of the Electronic Communications Act, which requires us to conduct research on the extent and degree of universality within the country and to advise the department and the minister with respect to possible amendments to policy. So we're taking it from that particular stance. It is something that we also do jointly with the monitoring and evaluation team in the department, and I'm aware that they've also pulled in SFSA with respect to the indicator, so that even when SFSA goes out to do your normal data collection every so often, those indicators come through and you can then check even from that basis the extent to which connectivity is available to every human being in the country, and what kind of connectivity it is and what it is being used for. But that's what you are informed by. But the second part of your question, Chair, also relates to are we playing implementer and referee. I think this is in respect to monitoring and evaluation. What we normally do on our projects, or what we did, especially with respect to Singapore, for example, was to request ICASA to go and vet the network. So we don't do it ourselves. We specifically ask somebody else to come in and check. So at a GSM network, we think that Malashini ICASA was able to do that. They were unable to assist us with the Wi-Fi network, so John Morogan and Dratto. So we are in talks with CFIR to do that and provide a report. And the intention there is really for us to provide assurance to yourselves and to funders, which is the Treasury, as to whether or not the projects that are implemented are indeed classified as broadband network, but also what impact is it having? So what is the social impact? Is there an increase in traffic on the network? What kind of things are happening on the network? Is there municipality, for example, deriving benefits? Are people buying more electricity? I remember this was a problem in Singapore. So we have to put together an app to assist community members to be able to purchase electricity via the app, as opposed to traveling to the municipality to go and do it. So the question that would then arise for the municipality is, have you seen an increase in revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the kind of information. We're trying to move away from a situation where we're only reporting on numbers, hard numbers, to a situation where we can complement the numbers with the social impact, the warm and fuzzy, that's the whole thing we set up, hoping that these projects would achieve. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think USAFA has elaborated quite a number of questions, but I just want to go back to the question raised by Honorable Shin. I think, Honorable Members, we should also articulate it here that when we talk digital migration, the question was around South Africa Connect and set-top boxes. We should also put it here to Honorable Members that this project of digital migration, it talks to really a desired co-partnership, which many players in the industry were skeptical about, that the establishment of two departments, sometimes with conversion functions, might take us backward. I think this is a typical project where it's literally managed by two different departments from a policy point of view, much as we operate within one frame of legislation. So some of the obvious difficulty that when it comes to the procurement of the manufacturers, the Minister of Communication had to, it wasn't mentioned yet, had to do sites, to review the sites and to look at the adequacy, their existence, and that took a significant amount of time, depending on when you have to have a factory, when you manufacture, whether there is a plant, it's, you know, the technology, you know, all the things that go with production. So I thought it's important to flag that, because otherwise in terms of the explanations, it might appear as though there are gaps. There are aspects of this operation line which might be better filled in when reference is made to the other departments. But of course, when it comes to the DPS agencies, I thought USASA will be able to look at their plans and their responsibilities which are beyond them, the function of FinTech, post office, and so on, so that the timelines are understood in that context of other operators. Whatever is seen as an apparent delay should be understood, and sometimes factors beyond them. But maybe it's sufficient to explain how they control the usage of money on their side. But actual meeting of targets, it might be informed by the rules played by other people. There's also another question which I thought I need to talk from Honorable Martins. Oh, no, maybe before we go to that, I mean, from a policy point of view, DCPS has clearly referred to connection to key government departments as what should be done within phase one. Phase two, then, I think that's where the confusion comes in as to the utilization of finances. But from a policy point of view, there's no expectation that DGS could access any fund outside what is approved here by Parliament. In the objectives, it might be difficult to see where does one draw the line. What I can say is that the policy puts a clear position that all entities should avoid fragmentation, should avoid duplication, and ensure alignment of technologies, which really doesn't necessarily mean that the operation should be entangled. Each and every entity is a player, still take full responsibility of their roles even their funding. It should, no entity in their operational objectives should even make reference to even DGPS and anything, because those are policy directives, but the operation, each entity should be clear about their goal and their interventions and the budget and the skills that they require to do that. With regard to the question of Mr. Arthur's role, from a policy point of view, I think in our position that we have been developing has been clearly pushing towards open networks. But in instances where network managers and operators are located within the municipality. It is only recently that we have managed to implement C15, really, to look at our ICT infrastructure. And now we do have ICT focal points at a municipality level, something which we didn't have before. And so the way people were operating sometimes out of economic interest or out of contracts by the private sector like farmers and any other people who were in that space. But now the ICT, in virtually all the provinces now, you'll find an ICT focal point. We oversee and manage all the network operations in that area and report back to a C15 ICT infrastructure regular meetings and ultimately to a PICC council. So I think it is going to ultimately come together from that point of view now that we are in operation, the C15. And I think, Chairperson, when it comes to this threat plan, I'm not sure whether earlier on really, USASA could say, there are things which are uniquely linked to digital migration. With much as it was envisaged earlier on, it was before the actual operation. Even ourselves, I think there are a few lessons that were learned since the process was started by Treasury and the team which was inviting people who will produce this set of boxes. So no matter what, one would expect some adjustments going forward with regard to the actual, not they won't vary, but there might be some adjustments when it comes to the APPs. Yeah, the question of Telkom, Honorable Martin, I think it will keep on coming whenever we talk about broadband rollout. Because there's this division. I don't know whether Telkom separates the wholesale side, which is purely private, but we find that Telkom has the largest on the ground, the cables, they have the largest print infrastructure. So, which some of it has been done from the time when they assisted with the World Cup 2010. And they haven't moved out of most of those communities. Even when you go to the most remote rural areas of the Eastern Cape, you will find that there might be some data problems, but they will say Telkom has been in this area ensuring that we have cables and so on. So I think it will keep on coming, and from a policy point of view, we have encouraged our policy division to engage through the forum of all the stakeholders in this broadband rollout to continue having discussions about the clarification of rules, avoiding duplication, and so on. And the Chairperson, with regard to centers of excellence, we are, especially in rural areas, USASA's mandate is to focus on rural areas primarily. So I think we often hear of what was done at Msinga, the infrastructure, the networks, and as to how we get to these centers of excellence, it calls for I don't think it will be a responsibility of USASA alone. We'll all have to look at what is an ideal ICT, the digital infrastructure that will service the people. So might have to look at how it's articulated, but that's really the ultimate goal for everyone, that when you go to these difficult rural areas where there are quite a number of issues, like illiteracy, unemployment, where the broadband rollout will actually be a hub of the desired digital revolution. So we have to document and articulate clearly what is the most affordable, ideal center in each of those communities. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. Maybe mine is really a minimal addition because the game has actually captured what I understand to be the response to two questions raised. First of all, Chair, I need to confirm that it is true that phase one of the broadband rollout relates to the age-identified districts, and that phase two is the rollout to the rest of the country, the remaining, or the other 44 or so districts. Now, the question is, has there ever been a time, or is it possible that the department is utilizing USAF funds to roll out its program? And the response there, Chair, is a resounding no. We as the department get the funding for this program through the fiscal allocation which is appropriated by Parliament, and we are utilizing exclusively those funds for the rollout of the program. How do we then see the program of USASA insofar as program rollout is concerned? Our understanding is that USASA decided to align to the phase one rollout. They are essentially complementing what is happening in phase one. There is no utilization of their funds for our program. We will be accounting for our program separately from what they are doing, and we will not use the statistics generated from USASA funding to ours. They focus, in our understanding, on areas which are further from the infrastructure as per their mandate of servicing really underserviced areas. So our program is not funded by USAF or USAF funding at all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I'm going to open for members to do follow up. Maybe just on the issue of realigning, I'm not so sure, TDG, what you mean when you say realigning. Because, for example, I'll come, if you identify the district, based on the broadband presentation we received as a portfolio committee, in this 8 district, all the entities, government entities, schools, everything will be connected. Now, what I want to understand, what becomes, what is USASA going to do, for example, in OASAM? Because in terms of the broadband presentation from the department, all government entities, everything that relates to government will be connected. Schools, police stations, your libraries, everything. It's covered based on the presentation we received as part of the 8 districts, especially including the OATAM. Now, what is it, if you are aligning, it's fine, it's not a problem. What is it that USASA will be doing in that? What collectivity can you do in that community? So that we are clear, there are no duplications. Because once we are clear, we are going to approve the budget of USASA with the plans, we are going to approve the budget of the department with plans. Now it must be clear, because where are we sitting, we are not clear. Where do we do what? We are clear from the side of the department based on their presentation, what they are going to do. Now can you also tell us what they are going to do with the money that they are saying are going to watch them? That's the first one from my side. And I'm going to open for members. Or maybe let me tell open members and then. I just wanted to check on this one that I'll open for members and then I'll come back before I do. And now my kids on a volunteer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your first comment was well said. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for the explanation on Ming. You know, when Sava talks about underserviced areas, and again, I just need to go back to this because I want some kind of assurance going forward that Usasa will not do a similar kind of thing again. And I'll tell you, because I was very concerned by that. Because Ming's particular network, and if you go on to the internet, it's a wonderful resource, you can build a small network for $200. You can get the dishes, you can put it on a camera tripod, and as long as you have line of sight, you can build your own Wi-Fi network. Under $200. We paid 41 million rand for that network with no contract, no contractual obligation for the supplier of that network. As soon as he built that network, he was paid. He could have walked away and gone to sun himself for the rest of his life. Very, very scarce skills are required to build, maintain, and operate networks, and there was no contractual obligation for him to do so. And this is my comment. You said, yes, but there are commercial incentives, and you gave a couple of reasons. There's a big commercial incentive and recreational incentive for somebody to take 25 million rand profit or 50 million rand profit and go and lie on a beach without any... So I just want to make sure that SAS is going to make absolutely sure that when you do that kind of thing, firstly, that there is a contractual obligation for the person who is supplying that network to actually make sure that it runs for a period of time in the old operate and maintain framework. And secondly, that it actually happens in an underserviced area. Because when we saw those network towers that Ming had put up, they were right next to existing towers. There was a large telecom tower with an massive line of sight. There was a large, Vodacom or MTN tower at another site, but the point is that every single one of these sites, in fact, when we went up to the first site in that deeper, more rural area, we saw the big tower, we thought that's what we were going to, but no, it was this little, the small little thing on the site that we were looking at. So, and it was said by the telecom man that they were happy to rent space on those towers to any network provider. So, my point is this, and it's almost like toll roads in Gauteng. If you're coming for money, to the consumer and to the taxpayer, and you're asking for more money, you're asking for your funding to be increased, that levy to be increased by five times, then you must make sure that you're spending that money wisely and well. Otherwise, it becomes a grudge. And anybody who's paying this kind of money, anybody who's contributing towards that levy, then becomes a grudge spend. When you go to the taxpayers and you ask taxpayers to spend their hard-earned money on government programs, you've got to be absolutely sure that they're getting good value for money so that it doesn't become a grudge spend for taxpayer. Then, excuse me, my second question. You said there's one person who's employed in the organization responsible for stakeholder engagement. I noticed on your... on page 26 of your performance plan, you've got 50. Have you still got 58 employees with 47 approved posts? If you could just answer that question, and then and what is a social skill? My daughter did registration weekend because she said she was building her social skills by interacting with voters. What is a social skill in your organisation? And then. You said you've got one person doing stakeholder engagement, and you've put that down as a key target, and you said social media and media. So is she or he, are they going to run a Facebook page and a Twitter account? If they are, you've given 1 year for, sorry, Chairperson, let me just find the slide. Page 27, you said, as a target, because I think what we'd like to see are real targets that we can follow and things that are meaningful rather than just jargon and phrases. You said the implementation of the stakeholder on page 8 of the presentation, the implementation of the stakeholder engagement strategy and integrated communications policy. So I therefore to assume that this one person is going to sit for a year and think about this strategy. So she'll come up with a strategy, or he will come up with a strategy. And then in 2018, it's the development and implementation of the annual stakeholder engagement plan. So the strategy they'll think about, and then they'll come up with a plan the following year. And then in 2018-19, the review and implementation of the plan. So in that year, they'll then implement the plan. As a target, it just seems so nebulous to me. It's almost as if you're wasting space on that particular line. And to hold it up as a target, I think, is disingenuous, in fact, if that's all that single person is doing in terms of stakeholder engagement. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are going back to the set-top box and the manufacturers of same. I think 140 companies submitted their details to be considered as manufacturers of the set-top boxes. Of those, 26 were chosen for the final list, from which 3 were actually given orders. Now, it was a fairly lengthy process of evaluating who got on the list. And it's very, and there was much song and dance made about the fact that the orders would not be given to anybody who did not qualify. So I'm actually appalled to hear that of the 3 who did qualify, who did get orders, 2 of them didn't have the proper facilities to make these boxes. What consequences are being taken? Are they being kicked off the list? Because there were a lot of very experienced manufacturers who were not included, and they were sidelined or accompanied. There's Demer, I think his name is, which is a marketing company. Wouldn't know a fuse from a circuit board, and yet they were, having to, they got one of the orders, which is, very, very strange. So can you please tell me what's happening about that? Is there consequences? Are they being tossed out? Are we going to reopen the tender process again? Because there really is something really very odd if by the time you ask you to place the orders, you suddenly find it under the factory. I mean, come on, guys, what have you doing for 3 years? You've managed the process. And I'd like there to be consequences for that. And this project has delayed long enough. Then, going back to, just a small thing, none of the plans for yourself or USASA are signed by the minister. That needs to be sorted out. I also wanted to find out what was happening about the increase in the levy. I know you want me to put it up to 1 cent in the levy and I'll to do so. I want to know if there are any stakeholder relations discussions happening as to whether 1 cent is fair too high, whether if they ought to take 0.5, whether that would be better. Whether you've been any research into whether this is affordable and what impact it will have on their taxes and stuff. Yes, I also want to know how much money is actually in the fund. There's a strange graph in one of the reports that came from the BSMA, which said somewhere along the line, I can't find it now, let me just page 22 of what. As it must have been the strategic plan. That's not even there. But it showed that we had a very small amount of money. Total funds for South Africa in this graph. I've got it as a graph on page 22, which I can't find out. I didn't use that memory. Which was 735,000 rand in last year. I mean, that is very bizarre. So I'm sure there should be billions in the USAF fund. This yesterday said there was 735,000. So I just wanted to know why that was put there, what's the accuracy of that. And then there seems to be sort of a bit of a hiatus happening because of uncertainty about the ICT policy review. Wanting to know how much of an impact that's having on your plans to roll out. Because you're talking about doing away with the policy or the ICT policy review talks about doing away with your policy development and review plans, but then you need to include those in your targets for the year. I wanted to actually understand whether you are holding back or whether you're just going to continue as business as normal. I think I'll leave that there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Just one question. Can you please tell us how many boxes have been delivered? The set-up boxes. How many have been delivered so far? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there are several things that one would want to, and agree with Honorable McKenzie. The point Honorable McKenzie raises about the agency worrying, putting as a target the issue of media, its message, or positive message on the media, and I don't think the agency should be worrying itself about being in the point. Your responsibility is to go and deliver a service. Now, if you are to put even as a target to say you want to see positive media about, are you saying to us you are going to look for a rebranding of the organization? Are you looking at marketing of the organization? Are you spending money about the image of the organization? Because my understanding of image and that people will write good things about you when you do good things. You can't just want to go and create a positive image. What are we saying here on this side? It's something that you should have put in on the side. And now, this is on your USASA annual performance on page 4. Now, I said I'll come to the USASA annual performance list. Starting at page 11, there are three areas where you allocated funds to. What is the difference between equal and PVC? What is the difference between broadband and infrastructure rollout under service area e-connectivity and rapid deployment of other services? And why would we have an allocated percentage of amount for this current year, which we do have, hand over the existing access centers? Is this a budget for a ceremony? This is on page 11 of the itself. Maybe if you can explain that. Then you move to on the last page 12. Inability to deliver on the use of mandate due to inadequate driver and technical skills. Mitigating, then you are saying expediting the finalization of organizational development. I don't know if I read this one earlier on in terms of being a target of the previous year, meaning you are still going to be unable to deliver on the mandate. And how are we addressing that? How are we closing the gap? Should we fail to achieve that target? And then I'll come to the issues of PDF project later. Let me just focus on the other. Now, in terms of the discussions we had on schools connectivity, where we got an understanding, and I think when we had that meeting, we called as well, we started to be part of that meeting. Part of the sequence, and we were explaining to you, one, is that we're going to have, as part of their license obligation, the offering of connecting costs, and the expectation is that after they have an obligation of maintaining up 18 months, then after that, you start to change. Now, in terms of that discussion, everything, I do not find that expression in your report, your announcement. Now, something that we thought it has been clear, that at some point, you certainly should start putting that into their plans. And then you can talk if there's shortage of funds around it. But if it does not find an expression anywhere, but in that, USASA is doing new projects on schools continuity. Since we not be doing schools continuity anymore, but to the support of that, because I think to facilitate the broadband connectivity of educational institutions, primary healthcare facilities, and government institutions by the individual. It simply even goes back to what I was saying. Which institutions are this one that USASA is talking about? versus broadband rollout plan by the tribe. And then I think then move into the issues that have been raised on the DS project. First, I think we need to be very clear from where we're sitting. I think because the project has been delayed long, the issues of we're talking about shortfalls when we are moving spend what has been allocated over years. So I don't think from a portfolio point of view we could even start to debate the issue of requesting more funds for this project. In the context of our economic climate, in the constraints that our fiscal is, and with the record that the money has not been spent, that has been previously allocated and has been rolling over, I don't think it will be appropriate for the committee, because when we say we are recommending, we must give reasons why. So I think on those basis, I think USASA should not expect the portfolio committee in its report and recommendation to say that you would receive, we recommend that you receive additional money. Until there's indication of capacity to spend this money, that's one. But secondly, in terms of the clarity, in terms of how, because every time we interact with USASA, and I think we need to find space to have that joint meeting with communication. So there's clarity on some of these issues on the project. But there's a bit of confusion. And I pick up from what Honorable Shin is saying. The last time we were given criteria, for example, I'm not so sure, because we are getting confused from what you are saying. The last time we were never told that part of the criteria were factories. Now we are hearing that they are not able to deliver because they don't have factories. Now, have we support change the requirement of the criteria from what was previously communicated to the committee? And what are those? Which are companies now are reviewing the whole process if the criteria have changed so that we can understand what is happening? And I think as part of going forward, we'll have to have a meeting that really goes into the detail of this project, because there seem to be some discrepancies from what the information we are given to you and what we have and what we have to and what is in fact here today in the meeting. Because that would definitely assist us in going forward. The other issue that I thought, and maybe it's just a little advice, and I remember at some point advice in department, it's normally not advisable for an entity or department to put targets in their plan which are dependent on other people. If it's not something that you're not going to do, you are going to depend on, you are going to ask somebody to do it, because monitoring and evaluation and quality control of your work must be done by the department. It shouldn't be in the target of design. That's my view, and it's something that we advise on, because if tomorrow the person you are dependent on does not do what you are said to be done, you have no control, can't direct the department to go and do an assessment. So those are some of the things I thought are important to raise, but serious questions, a serious concern around the BDM project.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. Also on your strategic plan, on page 21, you talk about, PM, perhaps this is also for you, you talk about the fixed market dominated by Telkom as the only provider of DSL broadband access. And I've said this a couple of times in committee meetings, and I'll say it again. Optic fiber. Fiber to the home, fiber to the business, the amount of fiber that's being laid in the ground. 2 years ago, Dot Fiber Africa told you they had around 10,000 kilometers of fiber laid in the ground. So when you talk about DSL, that old copper cable, the big thing now is fiber. That old cable is out of the ground, but there's no mention anywhere in your strategic plan of the importance of fiber. Perhaps going forward, you need to look at fiber networks, because Telkom is certainly not the only player in that game as far as that whole infrastructure goes. I'm sure they have a monopoly on enterprise. They have some you know, the really big operations are run by Telkom. But when it comes to actual fiber in the ground, those networks from private operating companies are massive, which just gives more emphasis to the concept of open access networks. And we're fully in support of that. But certainly Telkom is not the only player in that market. Thank you, Chair.
While we get news from the department, can we get an explanation of why Ms. Kadele and why Mr. Tsawe is acting chair of the box? There was no formal communication was sent to the committee.
So last time we had a different CEO, Mr. Ngoni is not with us apparently.
It's very unfortunate that the communication has not come to the committee, but I want to put it on record that the CEO who's been with SASA for 3 years, her term of office, his term of office ended end of March this year, which was 3 years, and so he has exited the organization. He was off here for the whole month, which is the month of March. So effectively, his last day of work was end of February. The question of Khadir is related to the TPS. Sorry for that. The appointment process is almost done, and we'll put forward our recommendation to the PS for them to have a look at that. And we can be making up a sort of announcement in due course pending the recommendations being discussed with yourselves. And so we made our job as far as that. The turnaround time was 2 months. The air was in the Sunday Times. We had a total of 144 candidates. We shortlisted those to a shortlist of 8 and a borderline list of around 20. And we had set processes in terms of two committees within SASA, and which were made up of the members of the board for them to go through those very carefully. And there were 2 interview sessions that took place. And ultimately we had 3 candidates that were appointable, which went through verification and psychometric tests. And we've recommended a person to the minister to consider. And also we've actually also included the other people who applied in the shortlist for the minister to have a view of the overall shortlist that would consider. So that's as far as that is concerned. The acting person, sorry, I have not covered that. Acting person is one of the longest serving executive members at SUSASA currently. She's been in a position of executive manager operations for a reasonable period of time. And we couldn't find any other person better than her, this case. So and she's going to be acting until further notice. If I was to proceed, I think the comment that was made on Telkom and DSL all day to the committee for the Sata Unit to look at its fiber networks and the fact that there's other players out there. I think it's something that, that we take note of. It's something that, that, that we look at going forward. I mean, it, it, as we have said, honorable member, it, it talks to improving the open access network. So I think we'll take care of that and we'll look at it going forward. And I take note of the chairperson's comment on the fact that it's not advisable for us to put specific targets which are linked to certain entities. Then that makes our deliverables depend on those entities. I think we take note of that. I think in the process of actually putting those targets down, there was discussion with those indigenous entities. And it was in the, on that basis, after some collaborative discussions that we first which I put in. But here what they are saying, I think it's something that we need to look at. We take note of that as well. And the short calls on BDM prices going forward, when other monies have not been spent, this is based on the abilities of USASA going forward position in terms of implementing the project better, and that's the assumption. But as we go forward, we need to be aggressive, and therefore the projections are sent. If we're going to be aggressive and touch wood, there's no other bottlenecks, then if we look at the numbers that we're looking at, which is 5.2 million of the set boxes that are targeted for the area that we're targeting for. Therefore, the shortfall out of that big number is a mathematically X amount of money. So we're basing that on that, and it's a contingency amount which as a business we felt we need to have so that we don't go back and forth treasure instead of asking for more money. I take note of what the concerns are, and especially since also we've got problems with some of the companies, which I'm addressing now the second question on clients in terms of concerns management of those companies. They were served letters of notice in December for them to check up their stocks, failing which drastic actions are going to be taken. Now in the next review, that's what we are going to look at. And I was talking to the acting CEO to say we need to review the position, and if they have not met numbers that we expect them to meet, then unfortunately we will have to get the legal advice and act accordingly. So that's where the process is. The question of criteria, I think nothing is different from what you have said, Chair. It's just that, the criteria itself, it has all those dimensions which were presented to this committee, I suppose. And so there is nothing that the board has debated in terms of that. We're still sticking to that. And we are not in a position where we're entertaining opening up the tender process at this stage. I think what happens is, depending on what the outcomes are in terms of the review of these other companies, then I think it needs more strategic thinking, serious thinking in terms of how do we take this process going forward. Out of all the lessons we have, I think that needs a separate discussion. And as you actually mentioned, other institutions that evolve, even government institutions, especially DOC, I think that would run the type of session for us to review the whole thing. So until such this age, I think we will leave it and not actually talk something to this committee which is clarified with those committees. There was a question on which institutions Okay, which institutions is SASSA targets? Vis-a-vis the one targeted by DPS. I think I'll leave that for the department to answer. I take note of what you said, Chair, in terms of the sequence of network rollout as far as schools continue to concern. That we, you know, we're supposed to have an agreement with them to maintain the network for 18 months, and then the SASSA takes over. I think what I must admit, you know, that meeting was recent, and I know my team would want to have a session with the related department for us to discuss this issue. That's when we said, when we do the, for instance, the OR, it's going to be part of that discussion, how we implement this type of operation. There's a question of inability to deliver due to the skills, how we close the gap. And I'll leave that to the acting CEO to answer that one. The same goes with the three areas allocated of funds, the difference between connectivity, rapid deployment. I'll leave that to the acting CEO to deal with. The agency putting positive communication as a target. I take note of what the committee says. I think in hindsight we could have put it differently. But this was informed by the fact that communication with SASSA is very, very, very slick, and we targeted the new person to also listen to that in terms of how do we get the things, nice things that SASSA does out there for people to know them. And when we're talking about communication countrywide, because we go to very remote areas, firstly, you know, when we actually go to a school, we need to actually communicate what the SASSA stands for, spend time doing that in that locality, then actually implement whatever we were saying. They were saying we need to be aggressive in terms of that. So as far as how it has been expressed, probably we can be different, but that is the gist of it. That's what we said, you know. And the communication person, among other things, was employed to really look into this communication of a lot of things around the SASSA. How many boxes have been delivered? I'm going to give that to the acting CEO to answer. The hiatus around ICT review policies, you know, at this stage, this is work in progress. We still are waiting. I was talking to one of the officials at the TPS, and he was saying there's going to be a meeting with all the relevant institutions for them to really engage us in terms of this issue. And where we stand is that our position is going to be business as usual until we get that into law implementation. At this stage, I'm not clear. So, but, you know, so our job is to manage staff because they're also keen to know what's happening. So hopefully we'll have a meeting and better clarity with the department. How much money is in the fund? I'll ask the CEO to cover that as well. What's happening with the 1% increase, proposal increase in level? I'll leave that to the CEO to answer as well. The signing of plans, I hope the department is going to do that. We are apologizing for the lack thereof of the situation. The process leading to which culminated to the three companies being appointed. You are quite right, honorable member, because it was a big process, 120 to 26 to 3. the three that qualifies. But what I said earlier, this is what means we sort of now take the process to the next level in terms of if some companies aren't delivering, definitely there's going to be consequent money in the street. We spend the letter in December and now we'll review that situation. The one that we just went to was stakeholder engagement, number of people, as you said, in total, what the social skills, implementation of the stakeholder engagement strategies for a year and exhibits for a year. I'm going to ask the few acting CEO to cover that. You know, the issue around USASA improving on the contracts that it has with the sort of contractors that were contacted, just for us to get value for money and to measure with close the digital resources and so on. I think it's something really, you said it so completely. I mean, there's nothing ahead on what you say. I think where we're sitting, we just need to make sure we follow through. I know that the team there is actually managing these issues on a day-to-day. But we need to improve. So from where we're sitting, for instance, we're talking about the sport to actually get a view of the past as well, and then to look at the issues you've mentioned and other issues. So for us, if there's improvements that need to be made, because money was spent, we need to make sure that takes place. And going forward, we'll make sure, you know, what this type of thing is actually reflected as you put it. The last issue that was raised is TPS presentation, which actually touched on the district that on the area that was going to, and what USASA is going to do versus what TPS is going to do. I'm going to ask the acting CEO to talk on that one. Thank you.
I'm going to try and address the ones that I've been assigned to, forgive me if I missed anyone's question. Chair, I think we started out, you were asking what factors is USASA going to be doing in Otambo. We're the intention is to implement an integrated broadband plan, just a project, just as we've done in prior years. So that would then involve either upgrading or constructing a network and then connecting facilities to that network, so be it schools or clinics. To obviously within the budget that we've got, so we do anticipate that we may not be able to connect all of the schools and all of the clinics as a consequence of the limitation of the budget. So it would be our expectation or our desire as in prior years where we would hope that the department would come in to augment additional facilities to that sort of one. On the 10B, you had a question around the number of employees. At the time of drafting the strategy, there were 58. We've had two resignations and the CEO termination, so we're sitting around 55 as a result of that. That would be, so we have the CEO's vacancy, we have the CFO's vacancy, as well as the company secretary. What do you mean by social skills? So what I'm referring to here is that If you did an audit on our company training background, you'll find we've got teachers, we've got people trained in social work, administrators, and so on. So that's what I was referring to. We have for a long time only had one engineer, and so you literally were relied on this one person. Should a bus hit the person, you were in trouble. We've had an additional, we've brought an additional engineer to focus specifically on the BGM project, while the other one focuses on the broadband project. So that's alleviated a bit of the pressure from that one person. But we still have a deficit in terms of right project management skills. The Honourable Shin, you had a question around the 1% levy project. What's the status with this project and that effort? We've been in engagement with ICASA. As you would know, ICASA is the one that would need to lead this process at our request. We've been engaged with them fairly extensively and inclusive of presenting them the business case, so the national strategy and the business case, where we've identified the access gaps and where they are. And so we're waiting on them to go through their processes before that happens. Eventually what we've came up to them is for them to consider an incremental approach as opposed to a one-off approach. We wouldn't mind a one-off approach, obviously. but we have to be sensitive to the fact and to respective organizations. So we're waiting for feedback in that respect on that one. How much money is in the fund? I'm presuming I would consider the fund to be the account that we've got, as opposed to what's called international treasury. I would probably estimate it around 2 billion, the majority about 1.8 of that being for BGM, and then, just under 2 billion. And then a small amount that we're using for connectivity, school connectivity, and as well as the broadband product. So it will be under 2 billion in the account. Honourable Ndumi, you were asked a question around how many FTVs have been delivered. I'm going to answer it two ways. In terms of the beneficiary, that would be 1,600. That would be the installations that we can confirm to date. The second way would be delivered to SACO for distribution to the beneficiaries, and that would be the 1,566,000 to date. Chair, you have a question around what is the difference between the classification, the final insurance classification of the broadband and the rapid deployment. The broadband line item is intended to primarily focus on the capital required to put up the network or extend the network or upgrade the network, whereas the rapid deployment line item relates to the connectivity, that's where your school's connectivity would be fitting. And so it's been separated primarily because in some cases the schools that are being connected are not within the broadband sites themselves. We would like to move to an environment where you have a single line item that is broadband, where you make sure that the schools that you're connecting are within a coverage area that has been financed by the broadband budget, I imagine. So similar to what we attempted to do with Mutale, where we put up the network, so that would have come up out of the broadband line item, and then we connected schools with clinics within there, so then that connectivity would be carried by the rapid deployment line item. I think it just confuses a little bit because that was the initial name of the project at the time when the budget, the entire budget was being allocated. Another question is what around the handover existing access centers. This relates to access centers that are primarily community access centers that are primarily within Tudon Service Center that we're seeking to have municipalities take them over. In some provinces, municipalities do accede to taking them over, but in some provinces, like the Free State, they are sitting under the direction of the MEP for Social Development, so they fall in there. And the intention really is to say we implement with them, there needs to be somebody on the ground that monitors their day-to-day usage. That is for how are you mitigating the skills shortage? So here the plan is to augment the technical skills specifically within the organization. I mentioned earlier that we have an organizational development program that was a project meant to align skills to the new strategic direction, and there's been delays in that respect. So we would either review the existing skills. Well, first one would be to review the existing skills and assess how far we can update those skills and formalize those skills. But then the second option would be a straight on recruitment process to get the skills within the organization. But again, like the chair said, we're cautious. We're probably going to move slowly as we get a sense of what's going to happen with the white paper and what will be contained in the white paper. Just so we can ensure that we're not talking at court offices. You also have a question, Chair, around the universal service obligations and the fact that they are not showing within our strategic plan. Has the matter been resolved? So this is something that we're still engaging with the ICASA on. You would recall that when we were initially dealing with this issue of the universal service obligation, we raised a few areas that we felt ICASA was had not afforded us an opportunity to engage on, especially the biggest being the financial implications around this. So if we're saying that operators are going to go out and connect schools and they are only liable for that connection for 3 months, then USAFA has to kick in. It presumes that USAFA has been allocated the funds, which was not the case. So together with the department as well as with via Operation Paikiva, we're sorting that particular aspect out, and it also affects the issues around maintenance. There's also issues we raised with them around what happens. So you've implemented, you've put the equipment there, and then it comes obsolete, and then what happens? Because as far as we're concerned, these obligations are for the life of the license. They're not 3 months. So those are the things that we're trying to sort out. And hopefully, I think we should be able to do it fairly soon. I think the other ones were addressed by the chair, but I hope I haven't left anything out. My apologies if I did.
Thank you, Chair. I really just wanted to talk to one aspect. The question raised about the former chairperson and the CEO. I think it's important to acknowledge that the development, what happens is not a regular practice. That you now we're almost back where we are with a completely new board. The chairperson is gone, the CEO is gone, the central company also is not there. The central company also is not there. And now USASA is talking about, and that is about the white paper, where to put them. Normally the CEO will be representing them there, because the ICT review process is not something which you impose on people, but agencies and companies are represented. So we monitor them, the ICT, very closely, because we wouldn't like a situation where we request. Even from cabinet point of view, there's also insisted that the institutional memory should be kept just to ensure that the organization doesn't move forward and backward. So that's the situation we find ourselves in, and we're monitoring this at the very closely now.
Did you? if I may just clarify one question, which has to do with the fact that none of the plans of USAFA are signed by the minister. Chairperson, there are essentially two ways in which the minister records his approval of these plans. Sometimes he will sign the plan itself. Sometimes he will write a letter to the condemned entity. The writing of the letter of approval allows the minister to raise other issues which may not be captured by a mere appending of the signature on these plans. So in such cases, then we would write a letter and raise those issues that the minister wishes to highlight to the entity in question. So I can confirm, Chair, the plan is duly approved by the minister. The absence of the signature does not imply that the minister has not had sight of these files. In this case, we would have written a letter to USAFA of approval. Okay.
Chairperson, I just wanted to make inquiry specifically around the issue of signing off. Is that not a legislative peremptory, no, compulsory requirement that it must be signed off? I mean, the way that the minister communicates other issues is a different matter. But I'm not entirely sure that it is in accordance with Treasury regulation. If it's not done. I just have clarity if the department is aware of that and if they are alerting the minister to it. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure if it's a requirement because he tables, the MCP can table. It's the minister that tables these documents to parliament. I'm not sure if the signature needs to be there, but in the letter that gets, I'll have to check with parliament, but I don't think there is, that we can verify just to be quite 100% sure. It's normally advisable that the documents that are coming, because they come public documents that are going into the public space, are signed by the minister. Because it's an endorsement. Because everybody signs, but I'll have to check with the parliament or even verify on the guideline. I've never paid attention to that myself, but we'll have to check. I know in terms of table, you have to say I table this as entity. Should that be an issue, we'll have to go back to the parliament. I'll have to verify that on that. But I don't remember anything. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Acting CEO, I'm still not comfortable with the answer, and I'll tell you why. In terms of your, am I listening to me? In terms of your strategy implementation plan, you put it as one of your strategic objectives and one of your targets, your prime targets, to optimize organizational efficiency. You've only got 47 authorized posts in USASA, but you've got 58 employees. You've got 11 more employees than you should have. What is the consequence of that if you continue along that line? Because you said you've embarked on a recruitment process, so you're hiring more people, but you've only got 47 authorized persons. I don't want to dig you further into this, but you mentioned a new strategic direction. It's the first I've heard of it in these presentations. It looks like you're the same as you always have been, which is a very clear mandate. So I don't see a new direction in this. But I really need some answers on those posts, please. Thank you, Jim.
Just more as a point of discussion, maybe with anything else. Just looking at the Act and what the Universal Service Fund is for, and it's basically to spread RTT services infrastructure to underserviced areas, basically. But yet, most of the money is being spent on buying sets of boxes, which isn't rolling out RTT services to anybody. It's rolling out broadcast services. It's freeing up RTT infrastructure. I'm just wondering how we got to this. Am I misinterpreting this? Because I would think that you also should be more closely aligned with the SA Connect projects than with set-top boxes.
If their money is to make internet available to people, they should be involved in laying the networks or, you know, fixing whatever one does to get the signal into people's homes and stuff, rather than actually saying, "Hey, hang on a second, you need a set-top box so you can watch it." I understand why we're getting set-top boxes. I don't have a dispute with that at all. But just saying, if when it comes to allocation of money and you don't have enough money in the fund, perhaps you're spending it on the wrong things and someone else should be funding the set-top boxes.
No, I think that one is a policy directive rather than a decision. But, so I wanted to be sure that I understand what you are saying. Because, it's something that I think we should engage further. Yeah, it's too late. We've got involved and therefore the money has been assigned to say, if you go through. If you are to look at what you're saying, yeah, it's almost something that is... It's something that, yes, indeed, we should be pushing more, because the entity has been pushing more connectivity, access to ICT infrastructure, using the digital divide, to make sure that everybody has access to ICT infrastructure, even those in the most remote areas, where, for example, a business cannot find a sense to go in because they will not make profit, and therefore, out of the register they pay, we should be able to make sure that those people there under these areas are the most and are getting access. I think it's something that more and more we should be able to get into the debate and maybe as part of the policy directive or policy engagement going forward. We'll have to look at how do we ensure that within the sector we make sure that the issues are closely and are addressing the issues that we need to address in the issues of ICT infrastructure so that we can compete with that. I think for me that's what we, it's something that we need to already in. That helps me look into the future and make sure that maybe some of the things don't keep the same shape that we do. It's not something that I think I'm sure that can get now. I'm not sure if there's anything, but I think we can with the SASA. Or in other case, there was something for Kemoso.
Sorry, Chair, and apologies to Mackenzie, because I think I answered one half of your question and not the rest. The second half of your question relates to the 47 vis-a-vis the 58 employees. It is true that is the case. It's a consequence of recruitment from a legacy point of view that should not have happened. There was a period in the IFAS's time where there was extensive recruitment, yet there were no funded posts, and we're sitting with that legacy. And that's why, like what Chair had referred to earlier, the issue of the frozen posts. We had to freeze those posts because actually the structure was partially funded. So that's where that emanates from. And it's one of the things that we were seeking to then deal with when we do a realignment of the structure to the new strategy. The new strategy that I'm talking about, perhaps I should call this new, it's the National Strategy on Universal Service and Access, which is the document that seeks to direct or chart a new path for USASA that is more relevant to what the mandate requires to do. So whereas in the past we went out, we did telecenters or community access centers, but we didn't address other aspects of our mandate, such as what Section 82 requires, which is the network component. This study is actually saying, address the access gap, quantify the access gap, qualify and cost it, and move in that direction. And that's what we sought to do when we started with Lusinga and all the broadband plans that we've brought forward. And so going into the future, it would be a question of how technology evolves, and therefore how do you then align what becomes the new electronic communications network in the future. Right now, it's called broadband, and that's what we're trying to steer the ship towards, away from tele centers and so on and so forth. My apologies for getting wrong.
I'm not blaming FNCO or giving you a hard time on this, because I kind of understand where you're coming from. You have an organization that starts with many people that can't help you meet your mandate. You know, you need engineers, but you've got teachers, for example. And you can't get rid of them either, because, well, they have the laws and all sorts of things in place. So you sit with an organization that's has many people that can't use and you need skills in other areas. So you're either going to retrain these people that you have and hopefully turn teachers into engineers, or you're just going to sort of bumble along with the same problem. So I understand where you're coming from. You know, I have sympathy for it. And I wish you luck solving that one. Thank you, Jesus.
I think there are quite a number of issues that you've raised as a committee that we need follow-up with each other. I think firstly from the side of the department, the issue of governance and the executive, we need to sort it out quite urgently so that we do not have an acting board chair, but we have a board chairperson. And it's encouraging to hear the process of the CEO that has been undertaken. So that the critical skills and the right level of skills, as GML was saying, that you've got a CEO, you've got a CFO, you've got a company secretary. Those are very critical positions that need to be closed to further. That's important. We definitely need a follow-up discussion jointly with communication on the BDM project. Just to iron out some things, look at the progress of the project, and where it is, and the money that is being spent, how it is spent, and the status of the project itself, where it is, all that. We'll have to have a follow-up meeting with that. But I think as well, in terms of where we stand around the issue of more funding, not this time, we will not be in support of allocation of more resources in our report for the BDM project until, as explained, until the issue of the current allocated funds are spent, because we are taking in light of the current fiscal constraint and the current community climate. Now, understand. I think it's important for us to clarify this so that when you see them in the report, you are not confused. Because when you say we support the request of more funding, we must be able to explain. And when you say do not support, must be able to explain. But it's better when you explain it here so that the entity can understand the context of what we are doing. And then I think as well in terms of ISASA on the I think we're going to make a reflection in terms of the broadband rollout responsibilities of ISASA outside and taking the cue from what the DG was saying. But it's not a duplication of what the department is doing. The department will work in terms of its project so that when we do oversight and when we come back to our account, this is what we clear to you. But in terms of the department's targets in rolling out broadband, it's not so what the department has outlined is what they are going to do. For example, in the areas that you have plenty of Tambo, they have listed the areas, the entities already to us, and therefore you just can't be found in that space. So when you do accounting, when you come back to account, it must be very clear what you are accounting for. So we do not want to see this duplication. So if the money that is used from the transfer from the user to just broadband rollout must be clearly disclosed. So for now we take it, there isn't a further discussion and the explanation, and therefore the transfer must when we account later, clarify on that in terms of where we'll be taking. Cross-checking against what the department has said they will do and what they've done against what they said and what you have done. So I thought this clarity is important so that even when we write our report and recommendation, colleagues are very clear what we are saying and where we stand as a committee, because that is important. We're going to support as well as holding you accountable in terms of, I thought those are the major critical areas that I thought should flag so that when we pick them up out of the report, they are not in confusion, or even when you say them, because you might decide to say them, they are not in confusion, so that we are very clear when we stand because the true guidance and guidelines are very clear, so that we don't send ourselves on the bridge. And that's to explain, remember, we also do this, but the appropriation committee will look at the work and the money and out of all the six, so we shouldn't be seen as the obligation of the committee in line to come in. We must make sure that we are really proud, we see the things and we get proper explanation. But I would really appeal to the board and the department to really make sure that some of the issues that we have flagged for this, let's clean them up. And the first step is to have the board, and as I said, contact possibly just a beef up of people that is in the sector, but as well as the staff, as the deputy chair comes, let's clarify those things. Because once the government
uncertainties and lack of affirmation on the road, it limits the ability of entity to do what it needs to be done. So that we at least, the sooner we get everybody in place in terms of work, then we do not compromise the entity. Our interest is not to see SASA going back to what it was previously. The work that has been laid down, the work that has started in improving, making sure that we have a credible institution that is an effective human continue. We don't want to see repression out of the entity. And that's why we really, really want to make it to the end here, this thing out. So, with those few words, members, honorable members, I'm going to apologize, you understand. We've got another entity that we take in. We're going to take a break. I know that there's indicated that we started a two for Dr. Fredner. And maybe let me just check with members. Do you want to take your, you take an hour or two? We come back at two? We come back at two. Okay. That's fine. So we'll adjourn until 2 o'clock.